today to talk to us about the USGS water programs in Washington State. I think just, sorry, Demery, I forgot. And you can hold that, and I'll just stand up if it gets to be towards the time.
Okay, I think I'm hooked up. All right. As you were told, the USGS is part of the Department of Interior. We're actually a really old federal agency. We're over 130 years old, and we're one of the first federal agencies that were formed, and one of the reasons for that is because when this country was founded, they wanted to know about the natural resources, so they developed an agency that could go out and map those natural resources. We currently consist of basically four major disciplines. We actually have a fifth, but I won't talk about that today. So we have four major disciplines, not just geology. We also have water, geography, and this is our newest member of our family, biology. And about 20 years ago, they put the biological sciences in with the rest of the other natural sciences so that we could have an integrated picture of our natural world. Because they added the biological resources to the USGS, they have, over the last 20 years, done a very slow and painful reorganization of the USGS. And this is basically the structure of the survey today. And what remains of the old structure sits here. And these are the old discipline offices. So there's an office of water, an office of geography, geology, water. And this is that fifth one that I'm basically not going to really talk about, but it's just geospatial information. And then this is part of the new structure where we have regional directors in the West, in the East, and in Central Region. And the purpose is to have bosses who don't have any discipline affiliation. And their job is to get us all to work together so that we can do integrated science. The mission of the survey... again, we're a somewhat unusual federal agency in that we have no regulatory or management authority or purpose. Our purpose is merely to provide scientific information to the public. And that information is information that's geared towards minimizing for the loss of life and property due to hazards. And it's also to help us more wisely manage our natural resources and to help us protect and conserve those natural resources for the future. In the state of Washington, the USGS has many different offices, and every one of these dots shows where there's an office of the USGS. I'm just going to point out a couple of them, the larger offices. This one here is the center that I run, and that's the water office, and that's where the major part of our operation is. We have at the University of Washington, we have a mapping group, and we have a group that does research in earthquakes. We also have a center at Sandpoint on Lake Washington, and that's our Western Fisheries Research Center, and they do a lot of genetic research on fish. Down here in Cook, Washington, is another fish lab that looks at fish in the Columbia River. Here in Vancouver is our Volcanoes Observatory. And here in Spokane, we have a Western Region Minerals Office, and then we've got a lot of field operations. Now, turning our attention to water, our water operations are managed through a headquarters operation, both in terms of our technical offices, program offices, and then we have some support offices. And then They're run through science centers like the one here in Washington. And we actually have one in every state, pretty much. And those centers are located predominantly in the state capitals, near state land-grant universities. In terms of our kind of national presence for water science, we have a national research program. And their job is to mostly do the basic research, the far-reaching research that may not have a direct application right away. Their job is to do the basic research and then kind of pass it off to the water science centers so that we can figure out how to apply that basic research to the problems that are out there in the states. And these are their major fields of research. This is what the Washington Water Science Center looks like. But in general, this is what water science centers look like in all of the states. They're composed of a group of people who do research level studies. We call them studies. But it's basically the research part of the operation. Then there is another large part of the operation that handles our hydrologic monitoring networks. This is day-to-day collection of data. Somebody has to go out there and collect all that data that we're using and analyzing. And then the third component is our support services, and that includes some QA/QC oversight on everything we do, administrative services, IT services. We've got to keep those computers up and going. Our scientists just want the latest and greatest in terms of IT technology. And then we have a publication services center. We have expertise in our office that span the gamut. We have hydrologic technicians, hydrologists, biologists, chemists, ecologists, engineers, the list goes on and on. The one thing we all have in common is we are putting our skills to answering questions that have to do with water science, water resources. We're trying to take our combined knowledge to answer those questions. We also, what you see here is some of our publications. We do have our own publishing unit, and we have our own series of publications. A lot of people ask, well, why would we have that? Why don't you just publish in the journals that are out there? And we do publish in the journals that are out there. But we have our own publication series because a lot of the work we do are for government managers, and they need a lot of detail, extreme detail, detail that journals don't let us put that information. And so if you go to the USGS publication series, you can find a lot more detail about our projects than are in journal articles. Now, the next thing people usually ask me is, where do you get your money? Because as scientists, we need money to do work. And so it's important to know where the money comes from. This is our budget in our Water Science Center. And you can see it's kind of grown over the last 10 years. But that growth is mostly due to inflation. Trust me, it wasn't because we got a lot of money to do science over the last 10 years. This was not a friendly atmosphere in which to conduct science. This new administration seems to be a bit more friendly to science. So we're hoping that our budgets are going to start to improve. But this was just trying to keep pace with inflation. Our program is divided up into three basic parts. And the red part is what we call our cooperative water program. The green part is our other federal agency program. And the yellow part is our USGS federal program. And that little bit down there is what we get for rents so that we have space. Okay, so here again are those three parts. And you can see the largest part is our cooperative water program, what we do in partnership with state and local governments and tribal governments. And then this is what we're doing for other federal agencies, and then our federal program. So I'm going to talk about each one so you have a kind of understanding for what they are. Our federal programs are money that is allocated from Congress to the USGS, and then the USGS gives it to the science centers. However, there's a trick. We have to compete for those funds. So the Washington Water Science Center competes with all those other water science centers out there to get this pie. And that competition is very intense. So the ability for me to bring that money into our science center is very much dependent upon the expertise of the scientists I hired. So I better do a good job hiring scientists. It also is dependent on the outside partnerships I can build with the local governments, the state, the tribes. So the more partnerships I can build, the more attractive it is to USGS headquarters to put money in the programs here in the state of Washington. And there's also a little bit of element of politics out there. So there's a lot of Congress people out there, and they're all trying to bring the bucks home to their state. And so they provide a lot of push and pull in terms of bringing programs to their constituency. An example of our federal program is our National Streamflow Information Program, NSIP. And this is a new program for the USGS, and the whole idea of NSIP is to build a federal stream gauging network. It would be to build a backbone in which local cooperators could then build off of. It's a new program. It is not completely funded in the survey yet. We have legislative authority to build the program, but we do not yet have the money. Another example of a federal program would be NAQUA, our National Water Quality Assessment Program, and I'm going to talk some about that today. Another one would be a brand new one, is our Global Climate Change Program, and this program is starting to get a lot of attention by the new administration, putting money into those issues. Another one is we're calling CPLAT, and that is a look at water availability within the Columbia Plateau. The next area of our program is our Cooperative Water Program, and that was that orange pie. And this is where Congress appropriates money to the USGS, and the USGS matches it with a local cooperator. That local cooperator must be a taxing authority, a nonprofit taxing authority. And that would be, you know, a tribal government, a county government, could be a irrigation district, a water district, the state agencies, that sort of thing. The best example of this is our hydrologic monitoring network. And here you see a gentleman on one of our cableways over a stream measuring stream gauge, stream flow. And you can see this gives you kind of a snapshot of what our monitoring network looks like. It is mostly for stream flow. We have very few groundwater wells in that national network. We have no national groundwater network, much to our chagrin, and we keep fighting for it and trying to talk about it and hope one day it will be funded. This is a look of the studies, just a map kind of showing the area in which our Water Science Center is doing projects, studies in the state of Washington. And you can see we're just all over the state. And a lot of those cooperative water program funds go to fund these projects. And I'm going to talk some about those projects. And in the cooperative water program, people say, well, what kind of studies do you do? What kind of projects do you do? And we do all kinds of projects. Anything that kind of relates broadly to any water quantity issue or quality issue. And these just give you just a little bit of an idea of the kinds of topics we cover in this program. Now, the third piece of the puzzle is our other federal agency program, our OFA program, we call it. And we work with all sorts of federal agencies to do work. That work is almost always on a reimbursable basis. That is, they pay us to do the work. And the only exception is for our DOI customers. Since we're in the Department of Interior, we try to give a little bit of a break to our sister agencies in the Department of Interior to encourage them to utilize our services, since we're supposed to be the science arm of the Department of Interior. And an example of our other federal agency program is we do a lot of work with the Army Corps of Engineers. The Army Corps of Engineers runs dams out there, and we are providing the gauging beneath the dam or above the dam to tell them, provide them information so they can operate the dams efficiently. We also monitor for total dissolved gas beneath the dams, which is a problem with that occurs with spill of over dams, is the supersaturation of the water with gas that kills fish. So we monitor for that. Examples of some of the studies we're doing under our other federal agency program is providing technical expertise at Hanford, or for the Navy at Keyport and Sinclair Inlet, or up at the border, Canadian border at Lake Roosevelt. Now, for this next part of the talk, I thought I would talk about what are the critical water issues in the state of Washington and give you some examples of projects that our center is doing to answer those critical questions. I wanted to start with the USGS's strategic science plan. And the USGS just recently developed our strategies for the next 10 years for science in this country. And this is that strategy: understanding ecosystems, climate change, energy and minerals, national hazards, human health, water census, and data integration. I'm going to talk about each one, talk about how I think they relate here in the state of Washington and some of the projects we're doing. The first one, understanding ecosystems. And you can see there's a bunch of salmon up there. If you have heard, we've got some serious concerns about our salmon. And this is a critical, important, and significant resource here in the state of Washington. And keeping those ecosystems that support those fish healthy is a large part of what we do under this kind of critical science thrust. Key issues: land use impacts on fish habitat, in-stream flows for healthy ecosystems, the impact of toxins on those ecosystems, fish passage barriers from dams and culverts, restoring coastal habitats where those coastal habitats are where the fish raise their young. And so it's a real critical area for our fish population. And then if you look in our streams, there's elevated temperature, elevated sediment concentrations, bacteria, high concentrations of nutrients and pesticides, and the impact that has on keeping ecosystems healthy. We also are trying to learn the importance of groundwater recharge on aquatic ecosystems, and we're finding that they're more critical than we realize. Here in Washington, shellfish is a really important industry in bacterial contamination of shellfish. Lots of contaminants, legacy contaminants, contaminants we used many years ago, stored in sediment, and what's going on with those. Stormwater runoff. We don't know how to handle the runoff coming off of our streets during storms, and that it carries lots of contamination that can impact our ecosystems. Okay, some projects that the Washington Water Science Center is doing related to understanding ecosystems include our Coastal Habitats in Puget Sound Initiative. We call it Chips and Fish and Chips, and basically we are looking at how shoreline modifications impact our coasts in the Puget Sound. We're doing some work for the Park Service on Lake Crescent, very large lake on the Olympic Peninsula, and it's starting to have some eutrophication issues, and we want to figure out what's happening and why. We're doing work on the Green River, looking at how a dam operates and how that can impact aquatic ecosystems on the river. So let's see, a couple others. We're working on the up in the Cascade Range, looking at alpine lakes and how precipitation can impact the nutrient loads in those alpine lakes, and then therefore the ecosystem of those alpine lakes. Hood Canal, it's been on the news quite a bit, has hypoxia conditions. It goes toxic every once in a while. The dissolved oxygen concentrations drop very low, and it kills off a lot of fish and other aquatic bottom dwellers. And so we are helping try to figure out what's going on there. And we're working with the Navy to look at mercury discharges into Sinclair Inlet. Here's just a few pictures of some of those projects. This is some GIS work. We've been trying to use a lot more remote sensing to tell us information in a more rapid way. For instance, how do we characterize or classify riparian habitat and also hydraulics within streams? And we can use different kinds of remote sensing, in this case multispectral imaging, to classify riparian habitat. And that's what you see here. We're also using GIS techniques to try to predict the impairment of stream networks for either fish communities or algal communities. And this is the Yakima Basin, and the streams are color-coded by how we feel, how impaired the stream is in that particular reach. So, for instance, the red part of this stream, that reach we feel is very impaired for algal communities. So it's a technique we're using to help managers focus where they want to put their money to get the biggest bang for the buck. Another program that does a lot with aquatic habitats and ecosystems is our NACWA program. And we have actually two NACWA study units here in the state of Washington, one in Puget Sound and one in the Central Columbia Yakima Basin. And there's a map showing where all the study units are in the nation. And there's the Central Columbia Yakima Basin one. And what we've been doing in that basin, these triangles represent sites where we have been working to look at the impacts of nutrient enrichment on aquatic communities. And we call that program our NEAT program. We have an acronym for everything in the government. Have you figured that out? Okay. Another area in ecosystems is we've been doing a lot of work on pesticides, both in terms of agricultural use as well as urban use. And this particular study was done with King County, and it was looking at urban use of pesticides. And in blue, down here is just the list of the pesticides we tested for, and the blue bars represent retail sales of pesticides in King County, the information that we could get. And then the gray bars represent the detection of those pesticides in the wells and streams that we sampled. So there's a somewhat of a relationship between the sale of those and their showing up in the streams. And these results prompted King County to change how they used pesticides on their roads that they maintain. So our science can have an impact on how governments manage. Here's another chart of pesticides, some data out of our NACWA study, and this shows different streams In different land uses. This is urban, agricultural, mixed land use. This is groundwater, and then this is streams. Again, urban, agricultural, and mixed land use. And dark bars are the highest concentrations of pesticides, and then up to just the lower level detecting it. So you can see that there's plenty of pesticides in our waters here in the state of Washington. And also under ecosystems, I mentioned before, we're doing some work on mercury in a number of different places. And these are pictures of our guys collecting samples in the Alpine Lakes up in the North Cascades. That was a very challenging logistic project because you can't just drive a car in there. Our guys even had to hike up with blow-up boats, and they had to carry everything in and carry everything out. It was a challenging project. Nutrients. I mentioned that nutrients in our streams is a big issue. And so we've been doing a lot to look at the vulnerability of our landscape to nutrient contamination. And producing maps like this. This is a map showing nutrient input into Puget Sound. The larger the arrow, the bigger the concentration or load of nutrients going into the sound. So the green represents a nitrate, inorganic nitrate, and the black part of the arrow represents total phosphorus. So you can see where the major loads are coming in to the sound. And the loads, the larger the load, it is strongly correlated to the larger stream flow. Okay, moving on to the second thrust issue, that's climate change. And some of the key issues here in Washington with regard to climate change are what is happening to our glaciers and snowpack. You know, a lot of our water resources here in Washington, especially during the summer, we get from that snowpack and glaciers that are up on the mountains. And so if they are not getting the snowpack and if those glaciers are retreating, we could be in big trouble in the summer not having enough water in our streams. We look at glaciers as also an indicator of climate variation. And when climate varies, we're going to be looking at the effects of sea level rise on our shorelines here in Washington. The ecological effects on aquatic ecosystems. You know, if the glaciers are melting, the water may get colder. And how's that going to impact ecosystems? We're looking at the effect of it on groundwater recharge. If it's not raining as much, we might not have as much precipitation. So, we're not going to have as much precipitation, so we're therefore we're not going to have as much recharge. If we don't have as much recharge, the levels in our aquifers are going to drop. And so that could have an impact on what is then discharged to streams because the systems are all connected. And we're very interested in the effect on drinking water supply. Are we going to have enough water for our communities, our growing communities? Some of the studies that we are doing here in Washington include, I mentioned a study on recharge in the Columbia Basin. We're also doing a lot of modeling of the watersheds in the Columbia Basin, trying to forecast how they're going to change with climate, as climate changes. We have some studies looking at snowpack using passive microwave techniques, and that work is actually being done globally. And we have a benchmark glacier monitoring program, which I'd like to tell you a little about. And that's this one right here. And hold on, let me see it, whoops. I could get it working. Have a little movie of information that our glacier monitoring program was able to collect, and it shows you how the glaciers have changed here at, on, this is the South Cascade Glacier. The movie picture started 1929, and you're going to see the date, I think when we get to the 50s, flash before. The white outlines the glacier, the blue is a lake in front of the glacier, and this is just a series of photos showing you the receding of the glacier through time as we have monitored it. Whoops. Let me lift it up a little. It's really picked up speed in recent years. You'll see it recedes pretty dramatically. And our hut is right here. We have a little hut. And the we're helicoptered in. They spend a couple days on the glacier taking measurements and hopefully get out. We do have that emergency hut there in case they get snowed in and the helicopters can't get them out. I think that's the last year we have. So you can see that there's lots of concerns about our snow and snowpack in our glaciers because we are used to relying on those for water supply during the summer. This is just some pictures of our work on Bering Glacier. We actually do kind of work with our brethren up in our Alaska Water Science Center to look at the Bering Glacier, and this is a picture of it right here, and you can see here's our motley crew, and we've been tracking its recession, and actually the impact it is having on the resources here in the lake out front. This is land is owned by the Bureau of Land Management, and the resources are used by many, and they've got real concerns and want to make sure they understand the impact of climate change on those resources. The next issue I wanted to talk about is energy and minerals. And in the state of Washington, the major issue is not minerals, it's the energy component, and in particular, it's hydropower. Hydropower has for years been able to provide the citizens of the state of Washington with cheap hydroelectric power. There, of course, are downsides to hydroelectric power in that there's all sorts of environmental concerns regarding dam operations. But you can see, here's a map of just some of the major dams in the state of Washington. There's about 130 of them. The yellow dots are run by the Bureau of Reclamation, the red by the Army Corps of Engineers, and the green squares are privately owned dams. And we are trying to provide assistance, certainly to the Bureau of Reclamation and to the Army Corps of Engineers, to help them operate those dams more efficiently and in a way that is easier on aquatic ecosystems. Other key issues, we have to try to balance the use of water for irrigation, for the power supply, and of course you know we want to optimize power supply. That's what our new president has said, And we also have to worry about flood control, because many of those dams were put on to protect us from flooding. So what we're doing is we're developing a lot of management tools for these agencies and helping to forecast reservoir storage. Some of the specific projects we have is looking at Elwha River restoration. One of the things that's happening with dams across the country is some of the dams are being taken out to improve aquatic ecosystems. So if these dams are old, they really aren't providing the power that we need, they aren't really protecting anyone from floods, then the administration is moving forward to have them taken out. So there's two dams on the Elwha River that are going to be taken out, and we're right now kind of doing all this before data collection. They're going to take the dams out, and then we're going to do some after to try to see what happens when you take out dams. And there are other dams that are at least being discussed taking out in the state of Washington. Some of the most notorious ones are the dams on the Snake River. There certainly has been a lot of discussion, negotiations, fights about should we or should we not take out the dams on the Snake River. The other thing which is kind of new is we are working with the Nature Conservancy and with the Army Corps of Engineers to look at how can we better operate dams so they do not have the harm on ecosystems that they've had in the past. We now know that keeping streams at a level flow, unchanging flow, harms aquatic ecosystems. That dams need to do a better job of mimicking the natural flow, yet still control for flooding, but they've got to do a little better job of mimicking natural flow in order to have healthy ecosystems. So that's what this project is all about. And this is just kind of spotlighting dam removal, and this is the Elwha River, this the delta of the Elwha River. Here's one of the Elwha River dams, and this is the sediment behind the river and the lake behind, the dam. And so what we're trying to do is figure out how much sediment is behind those dams, and when they take out the dam, where is the sediment going to go? This is about a project that we're doing on Lake Roosevelt. Lake Roosevelt is the reservoir behind Grand Coulee Dam. And for those of you who don't know, Lake Roosevelt is about 150 miles long. It runs from Grand Coulee Dam to the Canadian border. On the other side of that border is a large integrated metals smelter. And that smelter for 150 years has dumped waste, slag, liquid effluent into the Columbia River, which has then accumulated in Lake Roosevelt. And what we have been doing for the last 15, 20 years is looking at the contamination in Lake Roosevelt and trying to understand its impact on ecosystems. Another key issue is hazards, and that includes droughts, landslides, dam failures, tsunamis, channel migration, and most importantly, flooding. And we have quite a number of studies that look at flooding. One of the things is we have a 24/7 flood alert network where we're providing data to all the responders out there who are trying to protect us from flooding. And then I wanted to just briefly mention FloodPath. Oh, this is our real-time network of flood gauges that are out there. And you can go to the internet, click on one of those dots, and bring up what the stream flow is like at any one of those sites. And those sites are equipped with satellite telemetry. They beam the data up to a satellite. It comes down to us, and we load it onto the internet and serve it up to the public. So you can get data For the most part, every hour it's updated, but we're going to more rapid updating now. And this is just a look at the web hits that we have at that real-time data. And what you can see is it's somewhat cyclic in terms of the number of hits we have at any time on those real-time data pages. And those highs are when we have floods. So people are accessing that data to find out about the stream near them. And this is why we have a lot of the flooding here in the state of Washington. And you can see that there are these streams that come up from the tropics here, from Hawaii, and they come right on up to the Northwest. And we call that the Pineapple Express. And it can dump over 20 inches of rainfall in 3 days. It's not unusual. And this is about our flood path system. And our flood path system takes the forecast from the National Weather Service, and it feeds that forecast into a two-dimensional hydraulic stream flow model, and it will forecast where a flood will occur, how deep will the water be, how soon will that water arrive, at what force will that water be flowing past a home. So we can produce maps like this now where you can predict as much as many days ahead of a flood where that water is going to go, when it's going to get there, how deep is the water going to be. So that gives you an idea of that. Last hazard I wanted to mention was channel migration. You know, streams don't stay in one place. They move around through time, and when they move, they take out bridges, they take out culverts, they cause all sorts of havoc, and so we worry about channel migration. Another big issue I just wanted to mention was water census or water availability. There's a lot of concern. We've got all these people, and everybody needs water. Agriculture needs water. Industry needs water. The fish need water. How do we balance those competitive allocations? And so a lot of what we're doing is looking at water availability. And just to give you an idea of why water availability is such a big issue, let's see if I can get that going. This is a movie of the Yakima Basin from 1914, and it'll go to present. And every dot on that map is a well. And just look what happens through time. The number of people who are trying to pull water out of the same aquifer. It has a great, great influence on the amount of water that's available. The demand is never higher. These are some of the projects we have in the Washington Water Science Center that's addressing water availability. Look at the number of basins we're in. And many of these projects, they're specifically looking at the issue of groundwater-surface water interactions. That is the interaction between the rivers and the aquifers. In the Yakima Basin, we have done a lot. It is really kind of our premier basin where we're testing out a lot of new techniques. And what we have in the Yakima Basin is a central hydrologic database system in which models are then hung off of that central hydrologic database. The Bureau of Reclamation developed a riverware system, which is basically routing water through their dam system and allocating it out to irrigation districts. We developed watershed models in the upper part of the basin to tell them how much water is going to be delivered into their river wear system. In addition to that, we're also looking at major groundwater resources in the state. And this is a project we're doing in the Central Columbia Plateau. It also includes the states of Oregon and a little bit of Idaho. And the reason we're doing this study is look at the drop in groundwater levels in this basin. And there's a lot of concern about there not being enough water for the growing communities here, as well as for irrigated agriculture, which is a billion-dollar industry in our state. In the Yakima Basin, we are now adding a groundwater module to that network that I showed you. And this is just a little animation showing you a part of the groundwater work that we are doing in the Yakima Basin. And again, we're using a lot of 3D simulations to help us better understand the hydrologic framework. This is a look at water use within the Yakima Basin. You can see the majority of the water use is for irrigated agriculture, but there are other uses, and some of them are growing. Here's some more work out of the Yakima Basin. This is recharge map, and then this is a map showing trends in groundwater levels. So all of these numbers are negative. Green, the blue, and I think the red is the only positive. Yeah, the red area is the only place where groundwater levels have risen. All the rest are where they have decreased. And here's some of the publications that have already come out of the Yakima study. And you can access all of these online. You can access all of our projects online. I'm going to pass over these.
One question?
Sure.
But the bell's going to ring in just a second, so you can go for whoever's. Let's do one question.
Anybody have questions?
What are you doing with the nutrient levels on Lake Crescent?
Lake Crescent is starting to have some algal bloom problems, nutrients, and so what we're doing is trying to figure out where the source is, where the source of the nitrate is coming from. Pardon?
Have you figured out where?
Actually, it's been pretty problematic, and the reason is, relatively speaking, the concentrations are low. So it makes it difficult to figure out, you know, where are these slight increases enough to cause the algal blooms. Any other questions? We measure only three in the United States, South Cascade, and then two in Alaska, Wolverine and Gold Cannon.
Great. I know the bell's going to ring.